This Sunday. Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they see them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas, but mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
Oh, I gotcha! You thought I didn't see you now, didn't you? You tried to sneak by me now, didn't you? Now give me what you promised me. Give it here! Come on!
Hey, good dog there. You thought you could sneak by me now, couldn't you? But you didn't, because you tuned in to Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, with your hosts, Ray Guarino, and this guy right here doing the jig, Mr. Chris Switzer. What's happening, Chris?
I just love making this show 119% better than, I don't know, than it usually is.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Hold it a long time, hold it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't turn it loose now.
Hold it.
Joe Tex? Yeah, absolutely, Joe Tex. And I tell you, nothing is better in the world for me than when you wear that long purple coat and that fly hat and those glasses. Oh, you do it all the time. It's perfect radio.
Did you see my Sonic Lemon Eldorado behind me there?
I can only see a little bit the wind through the window because the glass is small, but yeah, I know. Excellent. So, we are jamming into another week of great radio here on Motormouth Radio. We're going to have a guest today. We're going to speak with Mr. Justin Airbetz. Justin is a guy who comes on with us on Thursday nights all the time, and I don't think he talks enough. So I said, hey, I'm going to put you on the radio and make you talk.
On the Thursday night show, it may be better, maybe wiser just to sit and listen sometimes.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's tough to merge in with you guys at times.
But, well,
there's a lot of chattering going on the plane and traffic spectacular on Thursday nights.
It depends on the week. It depends on the week. It's very true.
Mm-hmm. You know, that is true.
Things definitely vary.
But it's good. It's always good to have a guest on. It's always nice to speak with someone. To speak with someone who's not a grouchy old man.
Yeah, exactly. Like us. Exactly right. You got that right.
But you can call us, right? We got the phone lines open, 516-572-7440, to talk to either Ray or myself. And on this fine, upstanding Sunday, it's a nice day out there. We're all gearing up for the holidays. It's, of course, after Thanksgiving, it's like someone fires the pistol in the air. And everybody goes and races for the stores, and the Christmas insanity ensues. So, but 516-572-7440, if you have a problem about your car, or like Rob Leonard always says,
someone else's car.
516-572-7440. Hey, I've got a story for you.
Oh boy. Okay.
I got a story for you. You know, it's funny. When you live in the suburbia, you've come to realize there are three types of individuals that work on their vehicles, or I should say work on their vehicles, that deal with their vehicles. And there's the one type that works on their cars. There are car people. There's the other type that are indifferent about their cars. They're just utilitarian type of things. And then there's a third type that don't care at all. They just don't care. And I have some neighbors around that fit into that third category. And I was talking to one of them this week, and he was telling me that his wife had backed out of the garage and took the side mirror off the car. She had said that she gunned it out of the garage. And I'm like, that's really not the standard procedure to leave the garage, but
no.
That's what she did, and she took the mirror off. So he said you're going to pay for the mirror. The husband told the wife this. You're going to pay for the mirror. And she said, fine. And he goes to the dealer on a 10-year-old Honda and spends $535 to have the mirror replaced, right?
Wow.
So now I look at him dead in the face and I go, we have to talk cars here. I said, I could have probably found the mirror for $60 on some sort of site, and we could have had it delivered and hung it on the car in a matter of no time. And he looked at me and said, no, I won't do that. And I said, why? You'll be saving yourself some money. He goes, if I put a mirror on this car for $60, she'll be whacking mirrors off this thing left and right. She won't even care.
Oh, he was trying to make a point.
Just for the fact that she paid $535 will prove that she will never knock another mirror off this car ever again. And I was like, you got me.
Well, let me ask you this. I find a high level of redundancy here, because if this is anything, then maybe they have a different situation, but if it's anything like my household, the money comes from one place, goes into the account, and whoever takes it out, but it's all coming from the same place. So, like, if he's going to work and making the money and she's busting the mirrors, he's paying for it anyway. So who's he spiting with this $500, you know? He is a stunad, these nutmeg. You got nuthatch people in this nutmeg state of yours.
So, but I found the theory interesting enough to bring up that you would spend more so you know that there won't be so much neglect. You will take a value in it.
You see, I think what would have worked better. Now, I don't know. I don't know the people. I don't know the specificities of it.
Neither do I. I just lived down a block from him.
See, now, if he would have insisted that she took the car in and explained and had it fixed and waited, and then it would have been maybe a little more of a lesson thing here. But no, he took it in. He ended up paying for it. She got the car back. Hey, thanks. You know? Well, I'll do the other side now. Watch. Boom.
Yeah, right. For another $500.
Yeah. And the antenna while we're at it.
But yeah, it's kind of funny because I had a couple of weeks prior, a buddy of mine has a Subaru, and he has a it's the Crosstrek Subaru, and then he whacked the mirror off it, and he went to go and replace it, and would not spend the $500 plus whatever it was at the Subaru dealership, and called me and said, "What do we do? How am I going to fix this thing as quickly and as easily and as cheaply as possible?" Yeah. And he was actually looking for a black one. He needed one that was black and not one that was a particular color. He needed the black one.
Okay.
And I spoke to him briefly about it, and I said, have you tried, I think it was like carpart.com, I think it was at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, carpart.com.
Sure.
And he was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And sure enough, $60. And they sent it to him at his house.
He's hung
it on the car himself.
And that's the old J.C. Whitney site, by the way, as we've spoken about.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Or Amazon. Oh. Now, the thing with mirrors is, I've seen this from over at the shop. Some of them are very, very expensive for newer cars.
Oh, yeah.
Because, of course, they're all motorized, but heated. And then you get the lane departure and the sensors, and that's where it gets real expensive. But for an older car, like I said, for a 10-year-old Honda, that thing should have been like, you know, $30-$40. I'm very surprised. Yeah. And unlike the American cars, we have to take the door panel off to get the access. Most of the Japanese cars have that little triangular thing in the front of the window. You pop it off, and there's your three nuts, three 10-millimeter nuts. Done. So
It's easy. Easy breezy. The plug is right there.
Right.
Not a problem. You can have that thing swapped out in half of an afternoon.
Yeah, not even. So, yeah, not even.
Yeah, it's true. Like you said, three 10-millimeter bolts and the thing is falling off the door.
Right.
But yeah, so that was my week of adventure.
Wow.
in automobilia. I almost took the big boy out yesterday. It was a beautiful day up here in the Nutmeg State, and I was going to roll it out, but instead, I was responsible.
Okay.
I had to dig out from a whole pile of leaves.
Oh, wow.
And you know, it's kind of funny, because up here, I always call this the land of the two-cycle motor.
Yeah.
Because everybody's running a leaf blower up here.
Sure.
And you have a constant stream of that noise.
Well, now municipalities are passing laws against that stuff, left and right.
Yeah, it's the truth. I wish they'd do it up here, because I use that newfangled technology called a rake.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are these people so afraid of rakes for?
Too much work.
Everybody up here is afraid of rain. Oh, yeah, but it's easier to strap on a 40-pound motor on your back and wave this vacuum cleaner tube back and forth,
It's fun.
And it's fun.
Well, I'll tell you, years ago, I had the handheld leaf blower, and because of my back and the sciatic problem I have, just even that weight hanging off one side of my body would trip the sciatica off. So I ended up buying a backpack because now it's centered on your back and you have the wand. And I tell you, that thing's a blast. But the idea is you don't put it on 200 miles an hour. You put it, you know, somewhere below half and you could actually work those leaves where you want them to go instead of just blowing them all over creation. Nah, I don't know. Well, whatever.
Well, there's two types up here, and there's those types that have it on 200 miles an hour and blowing the leaves into their bedrooms on the second floor. And then there are those people that I don't know how they run an electric leaf blower. I don't understand an electric leaf blower because all it does is like it's like the heat in any British vehicle. It's like
right.
That's all it's doing. It's not, it's blowing. The leaves are like laughing. Like,
you know, I have my,
is that all you got, buddy?
I have my old electric leaf blower that I had back in the 80s. It was a Craftsman. And I just kept it in the shed, didn't use it. And I went to the gas stuff. And what I finally did is I brought it to the shop and said, hey, you know what? We could use this just to blow the bays out, just to blow the crud that comes in, the leaves and all. So we use it over there. And it's, you know. But now I have one that's actually, I have a smaller one. It's a Black & Decker and it's battery powered.
Wow.
Yeah, and now Ryobi has a line, and there's another E line. It's, you know, everything is green, and their line, they sell it in Lowe's and Home Depot. They have battery powered stuff too. So, yeah, that's the rage. Now you just got to remember, of course, to charge the batteries, you know. Right. But
exactly. No, that's for sure. But that's my lament.
Yeah. Well, I have a lament for you too, and this goes back to the speaking about new cars. I got this off the New York radio message board this week. And it says here, it's a quote from a linked article that I did look through. It's quite a lengthy article. Let's see. It's a quote from the linked below Radio World article that you have to dig for. And it's about AM radio in newer cars. Now, you know, they've been talking about that for a long time, getting rid of radios. Well, the clipped quote is in electric cars. They're talking about fully electric vehicles. Electric car problems where the drivetrain makes so much electrical noise that including an AM radio is just way too expensive because of the required EMI suppression. So they feel, these experts feel that AM is going to be gone because of the interference with the electronic workings of these EV vehicles or the EVs.
Wow.
So now there's a real reason why AM is going to get axed. It's because I guess they don't want to put the big capacitor in anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, because if you think about that uphill battle of trying to keep a clear AM signal with all of that electrical activity going on, that's impossible.
Yeah.
That's impossible to do.
Well, there's a thing called filter bands. I mean, we've been dealing with filter networks, RLC networks for many, many years. So
I'm also wondering, I have an issue with the AM radio, and because I'm thinking maybe a better antenna would do the job. Because what I did with the Chrysler, I took the standard antenna out of the car and replaced it with a power antenna.
Oh, I remember that story.
Year's,
yeah.
Last year's lament.
That went on for about eight shows, if you want to go back and listen.
Oh, it did. Yes, it did. But the problem I'm having and continue to have with it is I get a suppression noise. I get an ignition noise, I should say.
Right.
You could tell it's on one wire because you get a steady buck, 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 buck as the engine is idling, and it increases with the speed and decreases with the rhythm decreases when it slows down and increases when it speeds up. So I know it's not the alternator. I know it's coming from one of the ignition wires or one of the spark plugs. But of course, this happens with the power antenna, not the regular antenna.
Right.
Like you could unplug the power antenna and plug in the regular antenna, hold it up, and it's clean. But then you unplug it and plug it back into the power antenna, and it's going buck, 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 buck. And I still can't figure out what that problem is, other than the fact that I think I told you I had to mount the antenna on a 45 degree angle so it comes up because Chrysler in its wit and wisdom mounted the blower motor right under where the antenna hole is, and I wasn't planning on drilling another hole in the in the fender.
Yeah.
So I compromised and mounted it where it's going up at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
So the antenna mast clears the the heater motor, the blower motor.
Well, as long as it ain't the alternator.
Ain't the alternator.
Well, but you know, if you're...
That's the problem. You go to look online to find the problem for radio noise, AM radio noise, and everybody blames the alternator.
Yeah, sure.
And well, I'm like, but that's nothing.
Well,
noise.
Because it's a big AC generator. That's why it's the biggest source. That is the source. But what you could do is if you really believe that it's an ignition wire, which could be very, I think that's a good guess, you could pull one wire at a time with the radio on and see when the noise goes away.
Yeah,
you know, and it maybe it's just a bad wire. You have the silicon, the winding inside is probably broken down. It's like an old solid wire that would make the TVs fuzz when you come home at night, like because that was some suppression.
I remember a long time ago we used to have the television with the rabbit ears, and there was a gentleman that lived next door to us that had a 55 Buick.
Yeah,
it was like a super. And he would start that car up, and I don't know what was, at the time I was a kid, I don't know what the heck was going on with that car, but it would make my television go berserk.
I'll tell you, solid ignition wires. Those were the days before suppression wires, before they were called carbon core wires. They were solid wires.
I'd be watching Wonderama, and this guy would get in the car on a Sunday morning, and bazow, there goes my television.
Right, right.
Until he pulled away.
Yeah.
When he pulled away, the television cleared up.
Well, once we got the solid wire thing solved and went to suppression wires, then later on, I would have the same problem with my motorcycle. The bike had solid wires, solid core wires, and that would cause some radio suppression, when you pulled in. Yeah. And my CB radio used to really fool with things back in the 70s. There was a lot of cool stuff going on back then, but... Yeah.
But yeah, I was thinking about putting a new set of wires anyway, because I wasn't really happy with the wires I have on the car.
Why don't you like them? Wrong color? I don't know.
Yeah. No.
What if you don't like them? What's the matter with the wires?
Well, because they're not, they seem too universal.
Okay. So they're not a custom fit. They're a universal set.
Yeah. They're like a universal set. So one wire is droopy. One wire is kind of tight.
Did you try moving them around?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I found that the combination, this was the best combination I could.
Yeah.
I could find. But I always felt that it really shouldn't take half a day to hang a set of ignition wires on an 8-cylinder car.
Right.
And this one did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to really put a lot of clips on to keep it away from things because I don't like when the ignition wire drapes onto the wheel well. I don't like to see it draped over anything or rubbing on anything because you're just creating problems. And that's basically what I like to do. I like to pop the hood and look and make sure all the wires are as touching as minimal amount of things as possible, just because you're just saving yourself a ton of grief.
I agree.
When all the wires are run really well, like on the LeBaron, all the wires on that car, when I bought the set of wires for it, ran beautifully. They all are exactly the right size. They all run and flow the way they should. They all fit into their clips so nicely. I like when it looks like water.
Right.
Coming off the distributor, it just looks like this artwork. I love that.
Right.
And I will spend countless hours getting it to look that way.
Mm-hmm.
And just this car was just, it looks good. It doesn't look bad. It doesn't look like, I didn't have to take four of them and tie them with a zip cord or anything like that, like I've seen under some hoods.
Right, right.
But I'm just not happy with it. So just that alone makes me want to change the
world. No, I agree.
Just seems a little too universal for me.
I had an issue like that on my Pontiac. I it used to run an HEI distributor when I had the single four barrel, and I had a tailored set, and the wires came around the back of the heads, and they were like they weren't even there. And now in this iteration, I have this Petronix distributor with a small cap, but it has HEI towers on it. So I bought their wires, and I was never happy with the way they sat. So I changed over to a set of Delco wires, and the same thing. Now they're fitting kind of worse, and I realized why after a lot of consternation and angst. The HEI cap is bigger, and this Petronix cap was smaller. It kind of just that little change in where the wires fit made a difference on a tailored set made a difference. Yeah, believe it or not.
Holy smokes, because what are we talking about?
Not
diameters of distributor caps, not a lot.
The Petronix cap could go inside the HEI cap. It's that much different.
But still, what are we talking about? An extra inch?
Yeah, but it made a difference.
Come on. Who needs an extra inch nowadays?
I guess nobody. I don't know. I do. I don't know. Somebody does. Can never hurt. Hey, can't hurt, right?
Get an extra edge.
That's right. Can't hurt. What are you going to do? Say no? Of course not. You're going to take it. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Exactly. So an extra inch has ruined your life.
Well, no, but it just, no, it's every time I open the hood and do something, I know. I look and go, I kind of grumble a little.
Right. You look down and go, oh.
Because it's not the way it was in the past. Let's face it. Right. Things aren't the same anymore, Chris. They've changed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, things, they make them saggy. Yeah.
I got to tell you something. I've been following this. I have a meme came by this week, and it was a valet at a valet parking lot. Big sign said valet. And on the top, they put another sign, no stick shifts.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like that was the anti-millennial valet. So get a load of this. An attempted carjacking in New Jersey stalled out when three teens couldn't figure out how to drive a stick shift.
Wow.
I love stories like this.
That's amazing.
The three 15-year-olds who aren't even old enough to drive in the Garden State got nowhere fast after allegedly swiping a delivery man's 2006 Honda Civic with a manual transmission. This was in Pleasantville. Right. And the car was left running as the worker dropped off an order. He left the car running. He left it vulnerable to the teens, but they didn't know how to drive it, Pleasantville Police Lieutenant Stacy Schechtler said, and they were foiled. So I think that's hilarious. I love that.
I don't get it. It has gotten to that point where every car, like 99.9% of these vehicles out there, are all automatic transmissions.
Now, let me ask you this. Can you imagine, if you can put yourself in a position of not knowing how to drive a stick shift, and now you get in this running car figuring you got the gravy train, and you know what the e-brake is, and then you get in and you say, why? What do I do?
Just drive.
So trying to jam the thing into, like, you're moving the stick, and you want to go in a straight motion, because that's how automatics work,
yeah.
And it's going to flop around, and then, like, what do? You got to be like, it's broken.
There was a time I went through a couple of years without mastering the art of a manual transmission, and no one would really.
All the years I've known you, yeah, which is about 20.
Yeah. My wife says the same thing. You still haven't mastered.
Right, right. So you're talking about some other years, though. There's some other
right,
okay
right. earlier. Years.
I want to hear about those. That's gonna interest me. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and I had to go out and buy my own car. And I went out and bought a 1980 Honda Prelude. Remember those Quaaludes?
I love those
Preludes?
Cars. I think they were one of the nicest looking design cars Honda ever made.
Really?
Yes.
I beg to differ.
The two-door.
But I really enjoyed
the two-door version.
I liked it. I did like the car. I thought it looked a little weird, but...
Okay.
Beauty is in the eye of. But,
yes.
But it had a great... It had a 5-speed, and yeah. and I remember driving it home and being completely aware of how one drives a stick shift. But I made the mistake of getting off the parkway, and I got out of fifth gear, and I dumped it into first.
Oh!
And I'm still coming around the corner doing like 45 miles an hour, and I let off the clutch.
And then I went to, I'll tell you something. In later years, the Japanese car companies figured out guys like you, because my Mazda, the 06 that I had bought new, you couldn't do that. It wouldn't let you go from fifth to first.
It wouldn't.
Yeah, there was like some kind of internal lockout. Yeah.
Well, after I scraped my face off the windshield.
Yeah, right. And got your rear end off the guardrail. Yeah. That must have been a sight. Note to self, no power downshifts. One gear at a time, maybe two. That's about it.
Right, right. Don't be that efficient.
Yeah, I was a big fifth to third fan. I do that a lot.
Oh,
Five to three, well, yeah.
Get the motor to wind up a little bit.
Well, you want to keep it in the RPM range, yeah.
Right, but fifth to first was
not. No.
That car had one of those speedometers where the tach was inside the Speedo.
Oh.
It was in one cluster.
Like an old Mopar.
And, huh?
Like an old Mopar. They did that. The tick-tock-tack. Yeah. It was inside the clock. This, the tack was in the clock.
Right. And this was like a crescent. So
well, the clock was in the tack. Yeah.
All the way to the extreme, what was it? The extreme left was 0 miles an
yes.
hour, and all the way to the extreme right was like, I don't know, 85. And the tack was the opposite.
Oh.
So the best the best mode to be in was when you were going downhill, you would take it out of gear,
yeah,
and the car would still be doing like 60 miles an hour. So one needle was pointing one way, and because you were out of gear, it was idling. So the other needle was pointing the other way.
Yeah.
And you were coming down the hill like screaming.
Yeah.
And I tell the story often, usually once a year, but I was in that mode on the Merritt coming down this hill, and I hear this voice coming out going, "Put it in gear, boy." and I was like, oh, and I look over and there's a trooper following me, and I'm like, oh,
really?
He knew I was a projectile at that point.
Wow, I'm surprised.
So here I am trying to dump it into fifth, like, because I was doing way over the speed limit.
I'm surprised. And you know what? I got to say, I've never heard that story before. That's the first.
Oh, wow.
You say it all the time. I've never heard it.
Yeah. Holy smokes. Now I really am getting senile.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. To stave off senility, do we have a bottom of the hour honor group that we can go before we go to our break and then our guest?
Of course we do. We have a bottom of the hour Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour, and for the holidays, drivers who celebrate in the holiday tradition of purchasing a Christmas tree, mounting it on their roof, and getting on the expressway doing 70 miles an hour. Nothing like watching the SUV full of screaming kids with the aggravated parents passing you at an incredible rate of speed with the symbol of the Christmas holidays flapping dangerously on the roof in the breeze.
Nice.
So, what do they do to keep the tree hunkered down to the vehicle? Yep. They take cheap twine and tie it down at multiple points around the windows, which acts like steel wool on the finish, wearing away at the clear coat and eventually through the paint in one trip back to the house. So if you see that SUV with the bouncing tree on the roof coming up fast in your rearview mirror, gently get out of the way and let them by. Or if you are that individual racing at breakneck speed to get the tree back to decorate what's left as quickly as possible, use your wife's car because she really doesn't care. And pat yourself on the back because you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour this week.
Jeez, what do you do? If I could find an acting coach to help you write these damn things, it's going to be like it's going to be like a four-part saga soon. And I tell you what.
I like to capture the spirit.
I know you do. We did that last night. We got our Christmas tree, and I had the guy come, and he didn't want to always net. I'm like, no net. Don't net it. And
don't net.
Luckily, the guy I found is from Queens. He's from Fresh Meadows. So, you know, right. And I told him, I said, yeah, I hang in Fresh Meadows. I know the guy. So, the UD is at Fresh Meadows. So I said, no net. He goes, oh, why? I said, because the first thing I'm going to do at home is take it out of the net. And it's the hardest part about a Christmas tree is taking it out of the net. So he goes, I'll put it on your car. Okay. So I threw the blanket on top of the car, and then he's getting, I said, none of that string. I got my cinch straps. I'm like, and Jenny was with me. She says, we got this. We throw the thing. She knows, open the doors, throw the straps through. We hook them in.
She knows.
He's like, man, you've done this before. I'm like, look, dude, it's not my first Christmas tree, okay? Come on. We've been doing this a long time,
Not my first rodeo.
And I tell you what, just to make sure we get it right and we do everything with the that we're safe, we make sure that Sundays at 8:30 a.m. we tune into Jewish Talk, where Rabbi Pearl thinks in Jewish but speaks in English. So he speaks to us. That's right.
Yes.
And his show features the best in Jewish talk and issues affecting the Jewish community. But it affects everybody because he's got a lot of good words to say. He's a very wise man. I like that guy.
Mm.
So with that, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break. I am going to, we're going to be talking to Justin Airbets from American Gases. So they built some cool stuff, and I think they might have even had a Thunderbird, a Lincoln in the shop. So let's see what's going on with that. We'll be back with more Motormouth Radio and Justin and Chris in a few minutes on 90.3 WHPC. Keep it where you got it.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln. Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A.
My name is Carl Anthony with Automoblog and Auto Vision News, and you're listening to Ray and Chris on Motormouth Radio, WHPC 90.3 FM.
You're listening to the Motormouths.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Vote them out.
You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
No, hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Vote them out.
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evan Root.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming. I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Oh, this is why I call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Vote him out.
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Word of Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Vote him out. This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motor Mouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer, 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
Now all of a sudden she started knocking him down and she started rocking. I looked in the mirror.
All right, you may learn something. That's Jazzy John, and we are back. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, and I see we have the very bright and illuminated Justin Abetz. How are you, Justin?
Good. How about you guys?
Excellent, excellent. It's a pleasure to have you
doing
on with us
well
today.
Yeah. I got to say, that honor group is a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it is something
you
to behold. And every week it changes. You never know what you're going to hear.
Oh, yeah. I was part of it last week.
Oh, were you? Okay.
The fluids on the ground.
Oh, okay. Well, you remembered it, too.
I do. Tell you what, when I'm putting transmission fluid in something, I'm not listening for it on the ground. I'm expecting it.
Oh, yeah. So is that, are you talking about it at home or at the shop that happens?
Well, anywhere, really. But yeah, at the shop.
Okay.
Right, because that was the honor group last week, was when you're pouring something into the engine, you're waiting to hear it hit the garage floor.
Yeah. Well, transmission fluid is tough, too, because it does, you know, it vents through the same place. Some transmissions have separate vents, but yeah, it backs up a lot if you're, tranny fluid is tough, yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, because it was something I didn't mention was, you look past the engine onto the floor, and you get to see, when you see your reflection, that's how you know you're really in trouble.
Oh, boy.
Because that's when you have this small lake going on under your car, which I've done.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
many times.
Yeah, we've all been affected by that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Justin, what do you do over at American Gasser's Hot Rod Shop? I mean, what is your primary responsibility?
Well, for me personally, I do kind of a little bit of everything. I'm into assembly, some fabrication, electrical, engines, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff. But our shop in general, we're a full service shop. So we do everything. We do fab work, metal repair, paint and body, suspensions, brakes, you name it. Pretty much everything but custom interiors.
You know, it's so funny because everybody stays away from that.
Well, it is a thing unto itself. Word has it that you're a pretty damn talented exhaust fabricator and welder, huh?
Not too bad. I really enjoy it. You know, I've done a handful of them now. I'm probably set to do one this week here. We got a 62 Impala in that we're going to be building a set of headers for and an exhaust. So that'll probably be another project I'm on.
So you get the box, you get those box of curves and all, and you got to sit and play Jenga puzzle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, okay. The old puzzle.
So let me ask you, I guess like from what I've seen, I've never built a set from scratch, so I can only go by what I've seen. I guess you start with your flange, right? You have to have something to work off of. And then where do you go? Yeah. Do you look like the hardest pipe first or the easiest? How do you mentally, because I could see building getting three pipes on one side done and then the fourth one just has nowhere to go. I can see that happening.
Yeah, usually what I'll do is, start with the flange and then you got to plan everything out, pick where your muffler is going to be, and then, connect the dots. You get that side done, kind of mirror it on the other side, and then same thing with tailpipes. Okay, I want them to come out here. Let's figure out how that's got
to
work.
Well, I would think once you get to the back of the car, that's where it gets easier. I'm talking about making those headers because you have you have steering components, you have suspension components, you have chassis. That all has to come out nice and clean. It's got to look good. And in the back, you're looking at more straight stuff. So, yeah, I give you credit.
I'm looking at it the other way. The back of the car, I think, to me, is more difficult because it's like Justin says, you want to get it to sit at that right spot.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that, I don't know, that sounds a little harder. What would be the which way do you attack it, or does it matter? Does the car matter? Like, okay, I'll attack it from the front. This car, I'll attack it from the back.
Usually, when I do them, I'll start kind of front to back. Just work my way.
You do?
Yep. Yeah. This set of headers. This will actually be the first set of headers specifically that I've built. But so that's the one I'm really excited about that. But yeah, typically, like so, you'll start at your collector and just shoot to the back of the car.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, because I would think that would be. Yeah, I guess you could probably any mistakes or any variables would happen down the length of the vehicle, and then you could probably fix it and straighten it all out by the time you get back there.
I've seen the guys, you'll set up your jack stands, set up the mufflers, kind of set up the pipes to do it kind of dry, and then kind of work it in from there. But I still think those headers are the hardest part. I don't know.
Now, these are custom headers, right? So you're building them from scratch?
Yeah. Not too many people make W-motor headers for a 62 Impala with a Roadster shop chassis in it. So...
Oh, right, that's the black car with the 409, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that one, yeah, we talked about that. That's parts are going to be in this week, so we're going to have some fun with that one.
Chris, this car is such a gorgeous car. It's lettered. It's got error-correct lettering on it, but it's got, Justin, you tell us about the engine. It's got a really cool powertrain and chassis under it.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, so the guy had the car built super-duper nice. Had the original X-frame that was boxed, had Global West suspension, a really nice 409 in it, and we yanked all that out. He's got a Roadster shop chassis set right up, came right from them, and an all-aluminum 509 cubic inch W motor.
Yeah, that's cool.
Wow. So I'm thinking with the Roadster chassis, you probably have a lot more room than with the X-frame, because the X-frame, there's metal everywhere. It's like tough to run a dual system in something like that, where I'm thinking a Roadster chassis would probably be better. Whatever chassis would probably be better than what was originally under there.
Yeah, the one nice thing about the X chassis that was under it before was he was able to take fender well headers and kind of run everything outside of the chassis and tuck it under the car. A Roadster shop chassis has a little bit more bracing to it. I mean, they're a pretty stout piece. But yeah, we'll work through and get it tucked up where it needs to be.
Wow! And it's got is the rear fairly stock or is it narrowed down? Is there any more difficulties under this vehicle that you'd have to compensate around?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's all set up with the 4-link and the 9-inch. The way the car sits now on the Roadster shop chassis, it is a little lower than the factory chassis. So we got to make sure ground clearance, everything's tucked up a little bit higher. But that's a pretty common issue we run into.
Yeah. And again, with headers, when you're making those bends, there's nominal radiuses and all that you can make. And, at some point, ground crashes into pipe and you don't want to do that. That's it looks ugly.
Yeah, not typically.
No, you guys are building some beautiful stuff. Of course, you're Willys specialists, which is most people think of gases, they think of Willys. I think of a lot of other stuff. And the Cougar you guys are working on, I was asking you about that last week. That's a beautiful looking car. Another one just coming along nicely. So how many guys you have in the shop, Justin? There's only a few of you guys, right?
Yeah, we've got 11 people total, counting the boss, the guys around it, the secretary. yeah, I mean, we're a fairly small shop.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably have, you know, between 20 and 25 cars in the shop at a time.
Right.
Wow. That's a big shop. At least big here, from here, from
yeah.
where we are in the Northeast, it's... You can get 25 cars under one roof at one time. That's big around here.
I got to tell you, I've been daydreaming because I've been thinking, wow, gas a specialist. I checked out the website. I'm like, oh, I want to send a Nomad there and just like, you know what? Take this car and make it fit. Do what I'm not equipped to do with it right now. Put this I-beam in it and let's get this thing gasserized.
You know? The Willys are cool. And like I said, that's kind of how our shop started back in 2008. The previous owner, they started with just the Willys stuff. And since we moved up to the Saginaw in 2011, we've kind of branched out. Mm-hmm. But the Willys are still kind of our big thing. We've got cars all over. In fact, we've actually got two Willys out in New York.
Oh, okay.
We just finished one up.
You know what we've got? Wow. We're going to go to the phones and go to the phone. We have a phone caller. We're going to go to the phones and say, hi, caller. You're on with the Motor Mouths, Ray, Chris, and Justin.
Hey, guys. It's hey, Macho Man Brian.
Hey.
Hey, Brian.
Is it Thursday? Is it Thursday already?
It feels like it.
I know, except the sun is out.
No. I was just listening to Justin there, and I had a question. And I just didn't know because he said that they didn't make too many headers for that. Do you have like a building kit, or are you just going to take pipe and start putting it together? They make like a Lego kit that you can like build the pipe and then take it to the bench and then fabricate from there.
Yeah, well, whenever we do an exhaust or header kit like that, we'll typically get that you build a kit. So I mean, it's you know a box of bends, of collectors and flanges, and you know you're cutting and fitting. Tack it all together, take it off, weld it. You're basically just kind of starting from there.
How many boxes do you get? Like, can you ask for another box? Because I'm thinking, like, as I'm making mistakes, like, boss, I need another box of parts.
It's handy. There's been a few times where, you know, let's get a couple extra bins.
Yeah.
We might need them.
Well, that's why there's always the bin in the shop with scrap for anything. You know, you always got to get that scrap in where you can get, you know, the little pieces. But, yeah.
Dug into that bin a few times.
That would definitely be me. I would run out of a left, and I would have to try to figure out how to make a right go left. But
yeah.
That would be kind of interesting.
Exactly.
I believe it. Sure.
I've always been in awe of the guys who build exhaust. Like I said, I've never done it myself. I've looked at it and said, wow, this... Yeah, that'd be a milestone to conquer, I think, in my own career. I think I'd get my own damn merit badge. I'd buy it for myself.
But it's kind of funny. I'm in awe of it myself because I'm thinking you have to get those headers to actually get the pulse to line up as it gets out of the collector, right? So you can't have that. You have to know the length of the pipe as well as knowing the bend, right? Isn't that a significant...
In a perfect world, I mean, that's the thing. You know, headers became known as tuned exhaust because back in the day, someone figured out that if you made each pipe the same length, the pulses were the same. They wouldn't be scattered. But plenty of them are not. You know, let's face it, a lot of them, especially the lower priced ones, aren't. And on a street car, it doesn't really matter, I don't think. If you're looking at a race engine, of course, every little bit helps. I'm sure Brian always had the best headers on that Mustang, right?
I tried, but if I was going to have to make them, Justin, I think I would just, you know, cut the hole in the hood and go with a set of stacked zoomies out the top. But just
right up there.
Yeah. Or now like the turbo guys. Or now like the turbo guys, you just put a hole in the fender and you got that big, you know, 6-inch pipe sticking out the side with the flames. That's cool. I'd be John. That's going to be John's ride.
Yep.
You go right to the demo derby with that one, right? With the pipe sticking straight up. You go,
right.
Right to the field.
That's right.
Right to the fair. I'm
very, very familiar with that, actually. That's kind of one of the spots I got my start in with working on cars. Yeah. My grandpa, he owned a mechanic shop. And so, you know, when I was a kid, I'd work with him on his race car. You know, he rode on a rail. Big block Mopar. We'd go to the track. It was a lot of fun. I worked as a mechanic shop for a while. But then we got into the high school and college, and a couple of my buddies, Jared and Jason, they were big into the derbies and the bumping around the county fair stuff. And so I got to cut my teeth a lot. You know, you tear apart a car, you just make it work.
Wow. That's awesome. I'm sure there's about a ton of stories that you could tell just on those days alone. Just making stuff work.
A lot of days, a lot of nights, long nights.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. A lot of bleeding. Oh, don't worry. A little electrical tape and a little gauze. We're fine.
We were good enough doctors. That's all we had to be.
Well, yeah, that's basically what it comes down to, you know?
Well, until my middle one had ripped her ear off by hitting the coffee table, you know, I was a duct tape kind of guy. But after seeing the doctor with super glue, that's all I carry now. So he put anything back together.
Yeah, it works really well on skin.
It does. It was quite interesting. But I was like, you're going to do what with what? And sure enough, they glued it back on. So wow. It's not too bad. But no, it was great talking to you guys. Yeah. Huh?
And her ear is okay, right? She can hear.
Yeah. She can still hear. Yeah, she's still here, and the ear's still here. But it was great talking to you guys. I'll let somebody else call in, and I'll talk to you guys on Thursday. And keep up the good work, Justin.
All right.
I love watching and looking at your stuff.
Brian, I'll tell you now, like I told Chris, I'll tell Justin too. I think we're on a new format on Thursday nights. We're on a new platform. Lewis was doing some playing around, so we'll let you know, guys. We'll let you know where we are.
Okay, cool. That'd be awesome. Yeah, that'd be good. All right, well, I can't wait. And if you guys need anything, give me a call, and I'll try to do my best. I appreciate everything, and you all be safe this week.
All right, Brian, that's right, because people should come on your truck and just to bust Brian's balls. It's that time of year. It's...
This is the week to start it, so come out and bust them.
Right.
I need it.
All right, Brian, we'll talk to you soon, brother. Thanks.
Take care. Brian.
All right, so long. All right, that's our own Matco man, Brian, calling in to check in and stuff.
516-572-7440 if you'd like to speak to Justin Airbets from American Gasser Hot Rod Shop. Yes, if you have any hot rod questions, we're all ears right here.
Yeah,
how does one get into Willys? I'm sorry, I just got you got a very limited clientele when you're just all dealing with Willys. Are there any, I mean, you're talking to someone who really doesn't know. Are there fabricated or fiberglass parts available so you can build like a new Willys car or no?
Yeah, so back when the shop started, actually, early 2000s, there really wasn't. And that's what the gentleman that started, he kind of saw that need. You know, he grew up, he was big into that stuff, and just nobody was doing it. So our shop, we actually, we make our own frames. We have it's an American Gasser chassis. We work with another shop that does fiberglass bodies that fit to that chassis. Time has gone on, there's definitely more people that are into the Willys and fiberglass bodies. I know there's a company out there that's making steel bodies, which is really cool. And that's where we're getting a lot of cars from out of state too. You know, like I said, we've got Willys in Montana, Georgia, a couple of them in New York. I mean, we got a few all over.
Okay, Justin, I just brought up another call. We have another friend on the line. Call it, go.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We got Cliff.
Great show as usual.
Hey!
I have a Gasser question because I've always been intrigued by Gassers, and I think they're awesome. But how hard is it to get the front end aligned? Like, how do you actually align these cars?
That's a good question.
You know, can you put them on an alignment rack, or are they actually like more of like a measurement kind of old school type alignment?
Yeah, you can put them on an alignment rack. We'll get things as close as we can when we're building the chassis, when we're setting up that suspension. We'll do a lot of measuring, a lot of degreeing, and get everything as close as we can before we even start welding any stuff in.
That's good. And one other question: when you set up a gasser, you're looking to the sky, like when you're looking out at the front. Do you actually ever have to adjust the seat where the seat's kind of adjusted where you're actually all looking straight
forward? Yeah, tip the seat forward.
Yeah, sometimes. And the funny thing is with those Willys too is the way they're shaped. They're such a wedge shape. You'll see some cars that are built, you're actually kind of facing almost the other side of the car.
It's like a Model A in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Not quite as bad, but they're definitely like that.
Right, right. Yeah, that's why the real serious gassers back in the day, Willie Borch and those guys, they made it center seat. They just moved the seat right to the middle and gave it center steer and said, you know what? It just, now we know where we're going. But, yeah, Cliff, to answer that question, the street gassers that I've seen are never really, I mean, unless it's for the effect, they're not sky high. The race cars were because they wanted maximum weight transfer.
Yeah.
But, you know, a couple inches just to give you that look. Now you can actually still see things. You see the traffic lights better, you know. And if it's really bad, you make a little hatch in the floor like the, you know, like the Dragon Wagon or the Hemi under glass.
Hemi under glass.
Or the, the wagon, you know, and you just pop the floor and you look down at the street.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that Hemi under glass. I think what did in Jay Leno. Didn't they roll that car?
Yes.
Three episodes.
Yes.
That was pretty interesting. I thought I cringed when I saw that car go over, but I guess everything is rebuildable. So, great show as usual, guys, and great guest.
Thanks, Cliff. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Cliff.
All right. So long. That was our good buddy Cliff. Yeah, everybody, who doesn't love a gasser? I mean, I've loved them forever. You know, still do. Yeah.
But not only on top of gassers, but you guys do restorations, because I'm looking at the Thunderbolt.
Chris found some inconsistencies on the website, that's, Justin.
Yeah, that's another good one, too. We're really into everything from, you know, your 20s and 30s hot rods up into brand new performance stuff. You know, we've worked on Hellcats and Chargers and Challengers, all that good stuff too. We do, like I said, kind of a lot of restoration, resto-mod type of stuff. Couple different pro street cars. We've got a handful of them. We got three cars we're taking to Detroit Autorama in March. That kind of runs a gamut from a restoration to like a Pro Street Camaro. We've got a slammed Oldsmobile. I mean, we're kind of just, we do everything.
All right. We did something else too. We went to the phones again and went to the fun and said, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Vic.
What's up, Vic?
I caught you in one. You said Wild Willie sent to drive. That's an altered. Guess is you have to drive on the left side.
You have to drive on the left side?
Yep.
Why is that? Gasser. Was that a regulation, an HRA regulation?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Have to stock the position. And also a question.
I was wrong again.
Not wrong that bad, though. But
I've been worse.
Question. Yep. When he builds the car, if you have a small block in it, do you move the motor forward to get your weight distribution against the weight of a big block or a Hemi?
Yeah, we can move them forward a little. A lot of the stuff we're building is for the street. They're not typically, you know, guys are typically not racing them. But yeah, we'll, if we can, you move things around to get what performance we can out of it. Like I said, certain cars, we just finished one up that had a 392 Hemi in it. You kind of just got to put it where it sits.
Vic, yeah, I got to tell you, these guys are building a PT Cruiser with a late model Hemi in it. That's going to be cool.
Yeah, wow. Last year's and next year, those Hemis.
Okay.
Chrysler's getting rid of them because the feds came down on them.
Yeah. Yeah, and the year after that's going to be a big square electric motor. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. Another question. You sell them a lot with the 32-inch, 31-inch tires in the rear? Or people getting away from that?
There's still guys around. I think the car we built for that gentleman out of New York, I think had 33s in the back of it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, people never rode one of those tires down the middle of the road. They're terrible.
Yeah.
Because they ride on the hump of the road. Most people don't know that, right?
Yeah.
Because
I know people that went away from it.
Uh-huh.
They hated it, and they put a regular tire in the back of the car after that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That involves a new rear end.
You know, I found out just by changing the street tires on my car from an M&H Racemaster to a, I forget what the hell Japanese brand it is I had to buy. It was only one tire size. It totally changed the way the car rode just by changing the tire, and to the same size tire. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there that you don't know until you actually put it into effect. Yeah.
That's why you ask a professional before you do stuff like that.
Exactly.
You know, you do it in your own backyard. If you don't read up on it and all, you're making junk.
Yeah. Well, and we all know we can do that pretty good, can't we?
Yeah, we can. That's why you have torches and welders.
Exactly. You just put it back together.
Yep.
That solves all the problems.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I'll let you go.
All right. Vic. Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, Vic.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
My resident expert, Vic.
So how did you end up getting into the business? How did you get into the American Gasser shop? What was discussed during the interview process?
So when I started out, I was actually, we were moving around, and I worked at an engine shop doing reman stuff not long before, and I got a hold of the owner. You know, they were looking to hire somebody, so I went in to kind of talk. You know, I had some obviously I've had some experience. I've been around, but just the willingness to learn and, you know, the passion for it was really kind of, I guess, what set things over the edge. And
yeah. It's important.
It worked in my favor.
That's great.
And I find that's a big thing too with anybody that's looking to get into this, just the willingness to learn.
Sure.
There's so many people out there that have been doing this for a long time. So many talented people that are willing to teach.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, you hit that right. We love to teach, and that's why we're doing this show 20 years. We're still trying to learn how to do radio. So maybe we're hoping someday we'll actually be able to do it, and, you know.
Until we haven't done it well so far.
We just keep coming back. You know?
Persistence is key.
Yeah, that's it. Well, we are. We're stubborn. We're New Yorkers. Come on, we don't give up.
They haven't fixed the lock on the door in the studio, that's from right. what I heard.
Justin, I want to ask you, there's a car on your site. It's part of a car. There's an old rocket engine with a digital tri-power setup on it.
Yeah.
That's looking really, because it's an older engine, too. What's that all about?
So that's actually a small block Chevy underneath all that.
Oh, cool. It's one of those conversions. Cool.
Yeah, so that's we're taking that car along with a couple others to Autorama in March. And yeah, that's a small black Chevy in a 36 Olds business coupe. And we're dressing this thing up to kind of look the part. You know, painted it gold, got the valve covers that say the Olds Rocket on them.
Right.
Just trying to kind of make it a little more period correct, yet
right.
it's going to drive and perform like a new car.
Right. What fuel injection is that? Is that a sniper system?
That system's a FiTech.
A FiTech, okay. Yeah, square. Really nice. I'm very intrigued by that stuff. That's so cool.
Yeah, we do a lot of the fuel injection swaps on street cars. Mm-hmm. You know, the Holley Snipers, the FiTechs. A pretty popular thing to do. You know, guys are looking for a little bit more drivability out of the car.
Right.
And you know, when those fuel injection systems are working, they're awesome.
Right. Yeah, that's very it. I'm still toying with the idea of doing one on my own car, you know, going from the 2.4 barrels to 2 throttle bodies. But yeah, you gotta get all the costs. You know, it's a little expensive. You got to get some. You need a contingency deal. You know, you need like a something to help you out.
If it doesn't work,
right?
Well, yeah. It's back to a 4 barrel. But
yeah, the closest I've ever come was the throttle body on an 84 Corvette. And there were two of them. And other than syncing them up, which you just needed the special tool for, I can't even remember what it was called, it was fine. It ran really well. So when Ray said, you know, two fuel-injected throttle bodies, I'm like, yeah, sure, why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, the OEM did it to do it aftermarket. There's a little more unfair. Yeah, that was cost the Chevy Ceasefire. Which
right,
of course was,
right, the Ceasefire.
They called it the Crossfire, but yeah, we all know about that, so... That was the stuff.
Yeah, it did take a bit of dialing in. But once it worked great.
A lot of those cars found single 4 barrels on them after a while.
True.
So, hey, we got a treat. We got Rob Leonard doing Kim Tracy's show today. So we're going to be kicked out by Rob, not by Kim.
So, wow, there's a switch.
All right. And with that, Justin, the time has flown. We do have to run. We have to get out of here. And we thank you for coming on with us.
Well, thanks for the invite. I've enjoyed it.
We will have you back. We'll see you on Thursday night. I don't know what the platform is. I'll let you know when I find out, and we'll go from there.
Perfect.
So, Chris, what do you always say that now Justin's going to say that Chassis John says after you said it from the people in the parking lot? What's the deal?
Don't follow us home, and especially not with a Willie's Gasser, because we'll see you.
Exactly. For Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Justin Abetz, thanks for coming on, Justin. We'll see you on Thursday. Thanks for coming.
We'll see you guys.
Have a good time. Out of here. 90.3 WHBC. Bye.